and welcome back to the Smashy Business Show. I am Farah Bashir.
And I'm Richard Fitzgerald.
And today we're going to talk about Saudi Arabia's Aramco scores the largest IPO for $12.35 billion. Qatar Airways as well has a stopover package for GCC travelers for $14, which is, by the way, it is an amazing number. And as well, Emirati Egyptian partnership launches a $500 million Nile side development, which is really cool. So we're going to be talking about it with Richard.
Good morning, Farah.
Good How morning, Richard. I'm good.
What's on your mind at the moment? What's businessy? Well, you were talking about yesterday with Ward about investments and things
yes.
like that.
Yes.
And one said, you said you'd invest in real estate, she said she'd invest in Disney.
Yes.
Have you thought about that further? Is that your final answer?
I mean, to be honest with you, I think I might need a financial advice, to be honest, if I should invest in real estate or oil or big companies like Disney. The thing is, what I fear is that if I would invest in a company, that its shares would go down and then I would be losing and I'm going to be like, oh my God, what am I doing?
Do you know what you could do? You could I'm sure you already do, but what people can do is start by thinking of their strategy and start thinking of their relationship with money and their relationship with wealth growing and their relationship with that. And one way that I found useful was to start the basics. So I read Warren Buffett's Snowball book, I read Rich Dad Poor Dad, I read a book by Tony Robbins, I read Ray Dalio's Principles and Ray Dalio's All-Weather Strategy. And then I started getting knowledge, because I don't come from a financial background, right? Like, I didn't work in finance, I didn't work in investments, but I started getting knowledge of what are the different instruments. Because the financial world is full of tools and instruments, and so is economics. And knowing the difference between a commodity and an equity, knowing the difference between the different types of bonds, fixed income, and other types of investments, knowing what an ETF is, and then once you know all those things, then you can start knowing. Then you can start researching a little bit more about capital markets and knowing the cyclical nature of capital markets and what it impacts them, shareholders' reports, but also inflation and different things. And the all-weather analogy is four seasons. So he describes all-weather as there are four big things that it can impact recessions and financial markets. So they're known as externalities. For example, if your company is doing really well, it still might drop because the stock market is going through a period of recession or slowdown and things like that. So once you have all these things, then the asset allocation thing is the trick, right? Because what you're supposed to do is, when they say diversify, that's not a pray and spray model. That's not like put a fiver everywhere, right? Diversified means having bundles in about four different areas. So you know when you do these financial analysis things and there's risk, okay, cool. You can have some money in the risk-averse things, but you should have some money in the riskier areas. That doesn't mean that you speculate. You should never gamble. It's not gambling. It's haram anyway, but you should never gamble. But you should. Speculation isn't the right way to approach investments. Yeah. And, you know, what I do, is just my approach is, I manage the balance sheet, my personal balance sheet. I remember when I came to the region first, one of the advertising campaigns that we used to work on for HSBC was my personal economy. And if you start thinking of, you're the manager of your economics, of your economy, even more than a budget for a household, if you start thinking of it as economy, then you start thinking of asset allocation. And you know, I put intangible assets on my balance sheet, and I put tangible assets, anything of value in the home, I put there. Why? Because the mindset is, so I do it on the first of every month, and then I reconcile assets. So there's some that are more liquid than others. So I move them around with a goal in mind of reaching a number. And in any given year, in any given time, there are certain things that have higher return than others. So what I learned from the Ray Dalio approach is that you still need something in bonds, basically, because bonds are safe. They're fixed income. Like, that means that you can't lose.
Yeah.
So a lot of what Saudi and UAE have done in the past is release more sukuks, and they're fixed income. So a bond essentially is either a government or a corporate issuing a loan and getting money. So they don't go to the bank to get money. They don't go to the capital markets, an IPO. So in theory, the IPO can be a liquidity moment where you can take cash off the table, or you can raise funds through the public markets to invest in your business, or you can go to banks or whatever. But what they do is they act like the bank. So they say Augustus Media wants to raise money. We can issue a bond. We can't really, I don't know, it'd be a bit complicated, but we theoretically we can issue a corporate bond and it nets out at 100, and we could do a long-term corporate bond, say that it bounces out in 2050. So that means that we have to pay the interest back if it's a 6% yield or 7% yield over that many years, twice a year, right? But that way, if we issued a bond of $1 billion dirhams, we would get that cash now and we pay back the people who bought the bond, right?
The thing is, like, I have a question. If someone came to you, of course, you know, you have a businessy background, you know, investments and so on, and would ask you for advice of, like, where should I invest my money? What market would you advise them to invest their money in? Real estate, oil, or companies like Disney, Augustus Media, or so on?
Well, that's an equity strategy. So I do think, if you're young, I do think you need some level of knowledge. Why? Okay. Because I do believe in outsourcing knowledge, and I do believe that we should stay in our lane, like we discussed before. But it's your money, and just like if you're purchasing a car, okay, there's experts, and then there's someone who has a... But it's your decision. It should always be your decision. If you're buying a house, if you're doing anything, if you're going on holiday, you should be able to pick the location.
That's true.
So you should know what the basic things are. And your follow-up question was about equities, but you should know, okay, if I'm doing equities, that's a little bit more volatile than property, per se, and it's a little bit more volatile than bonds, it's a little bit more volatile than savings accounts and stuff like that. Savings accounts really should be bonds. So, you know, but then it depends on your strategy. And Warren Buffett says, stay in your circle of competence. So I personally stick to investing in media tech companies because it's my circle of competence. That doesn't mean that, you know, I don't know about other things, but I just don't do it. However, I break the rules slightly because I want to bet on this region. So I bet on especially the IPOs that are related to semi-state entities, because I think it's utility. So imagine being able to own a little bit of electricity bill in the UAE. That's what you're allowed to do with Diwa. And the Salik toll that goes over the bridge that every car that passes, theoretically, if you own the shares, you're owning a bit of that. So when we see all these roads being built and all these metro and everything...
You're winning.
Because those companies are run so well and they pay dividends. I think they give 70% of their profits a year as dividends, some of them. I know some of them do. I don't know which one. But RTA have Parkin, Dubai Taxi, and Salik have all went public. And I think that's a strategy. And our first story today is about this exact topic. In terms of Aramco share sale.
Yes, and I mean, like, we did mention, I think, earlier, a few episodes earlier, about how the king of Saudi Arabia did, I would say, promote, and he did tell people that it's their time to actually invest in Aramco. And
I think it was the main guy, I think it's the chairperson, CEO of Aramco, maybe King Salman. I know you mentioned that yesterday. Maybe King Salman, also said the same thing. But
exactly.
So the IPO raised nearly 26 billion by selling 1.5%. That was the initial one in 2019. And what's the update now?
The update now is that it's at $35 billion the IPO has reached up, which is, by the way, the highest right now, you know what I mean? And as well, not only that, they did say that Merrill Lynch, Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, said that taking the total number, it will be nearly to $1.7 billion, which is, like, I would say, really a big, large number. You know what I mean? Like, last month, we did mention that Aramco did raise a minimum of $11.2 billion. However, now it's $12.35 billion. So I would say, like, people who did invest in Aramco are now winning.
Yeah, it was oversubscribed 4 or 5 times with increased international demand compared to 2019.
Yes.
And that's really interesting, because at the time they were really struggling to get that $2 trillion valuation. Mm-hmm. And that's why they went on the Tadawul instead of the US. They weren't getting that price. And now it's 4 or 5 times over, which is great. June 24, so just a month ago, they raised $11.2 billion by selling 1.545 billion shares, representing 0.064%, less than 1% of the company, far ahead. They have a lot. So it's a secondary, you know, because sometimes people have to decide how much of their company are they selling when they go to the public. Generally, you can do a share issue or a share sale, but they have to decide how much. And the proceeds, obviously, and it will help. We always talk about a Vision 2030, the economic diversification plans, which is interesting. They're selling the shares in oil to stimulate other parts of the economy. It's on the back of the 2019. So it also attracted interest from China and Asia and Europe as well.
And as well, by the way, like they have been very big on boosting their economy and tourism. And of course, like we do see all of that implemented in the numbers that they keep on sharing. And I honestly would expect as well the shares to get even higher and better and more, like bigger numbers, because when the chairman and CEO of Aramco did encourage everyone to invest in Aramco, because he knew that the shares of Aramco will be reaching a higher number. And if you guys did not invest, I think you guys can still have time to invest.
And Farah, that's why your question's so interesting, because you know, Saudi Aramco announced its dividend for Q1 in 2024, a total payout of $31 billion total payout. So now there's only a couple of percent of the company that's on the public market. Mm-hmm. So the retail part of that $31 billion is very low. We think PIF, or we should know the PIF, owns 16% of the company. So the rest of the company is owned by the state and owned by the state, basically. So $31 billion. The base dividend was less than 0.3, more than 0.3 reals. But 31 billion dollars is going as dividend, and it's pretty much guaranteed, right? So,
True. In
terms of if you're able to get shares in Aramco, and you can, I'll tell you how. I work with BHM Capital, BH Mubasher in Abu Dhabi personally. This is an investment advice, as we should say on the show, but. And it takes a few months, and you need a Saudi residency, and you can start buying shares on the Saudi stock market, or you need to work with a different broker, or you need to be introduced as an investor. So it wasn't possible. Like, you can do it if you're a Saudi national, mm-hmm. and you can buy if you're a bank in Saudi. But try and look at ways that how you can buy shares in Saudi companies, because. There's other ones, there's Savage, and there's other sort of gas-related and petroleum companies that are doing really well, because there's a chance that their share price goes up. Obviously, there's a chance it goes down as well. And not only that, but you're also guaranteed the dividend if you hold your shares.
Yeah, I mean, but I feel like it's still, or actually, I think that, because of course I'm not like a master investor, but I think maybe it's still a 50-50 situation, you know what I mean? Because like you never know what happens like overnight. I think shares might just like drop overnight.
Fair, but Warren Buffett's approach to this, Farah, is that you're owning a piece of a company, so he never looks at the stock market.
True.
Because it doesn't matter what the stock market says on a quarterly basis. If you believe in Netflix, and you're instead of, you know, those analysis and graphs on social where you pay $14 a month for 10 years, and if you bought, you know, $14 dollar cost averaging of shares a month, you'd own X amount of the company.
Yes.
The value goes up, and our dividend. Netflix don't do dividend yet. So this is the point is, you never look at the share price. Always look at how many shares you own. Because if you own 10 shares and you don't want to sell them, if you want to own them, own the piece of the company, and you're getting a dividend. So Warren Buffett also only owns shares in companies that pay dividend. People say he missed tech. No, because none of the tech companies up until recently pay dividend. Amazon didn't. Meta have just started. The only reason he bought Apple shares is after Steve Jobs passed, Tim Cook started issuing dividend. Mm-hmm. And that's when Buffett started taking 5, 6, 7, 8% of Apple. And now he gets so much cash onto Berkshire Hathaway. It's why he has See's Candy, Coca-Cola, huge dividend-paying companies, Wells Fargo, other companies that he invests in, the insurance company always escapes me, that pay huge dividends, right? So this is the strategy that if you believe that the company is going to perform well, which is why he doesn't own a smartphone, right? He just reads the reports, financial reports all the time. So he's able to read a balance sheet, and he has price earnings ratios. He has his rules. It stems back to the book by something Graham, The Intelligent Investor, is the book that Warren Buffett read. And in that book, it's a very thick book, but there's all analysis of what numbers you should read in a business to show whether it's the ratios are good. And many things are good, and then you see, are they valued right in the market? And if they're valued too high, then you shouldn't buy the share. He also has analogies of, he has a cigar butt analogy, and it's basically buy great companies at fair prices, or buy fair companies at great prices. So a cigar butt is a fair company, but it might be a great price and you can turn it around. So that's his analogy as well when he's assessing investments.
Understood. Well, I mean, honestly, these are really, I would say, gold advice from Richard. Well, moving on, Qatar Airways Holidays launches a new stopover packages for GCC travelers for $14, which is, I would say, amazing, because like, who wouldn't want to travel and make it a 2-in-1 travel, right? Of course, like, some stopovers can be like really kind of like, it's only for $14, which is amazing, and it's going to be for over 170 destinations. So you guys, as I said, can make your one holiday, make it into two by stopping over in Qatar for up to 4 nights, all in one single flight. Do you think that this is like a response to what happened on Qatar Airways? The accident that had happened with Qatar Airways.
Which accident?
Well, apparently there was an accident that happened with Qatar Airways.
I just think it's interesting. I saw on Sheikh Zayed Road or on Hasa Street today that Fly Dubai are pushing their holidays. Obviously, we know Danata have holidays as well. This is called like Qatar stopovers. It's promoting tourism and experience in Qatar. But the Qatar Airways holidays are a range of packages. I'm reading it. You know, they have for every $100 spent, members can collect one coupon. Regardless of the product chosen. The package has unique things, F1 package, fan packages for Qatar, and many things like that, 1,500 destinations. So airlines are helping, they're having ancillary services, so they're trying to have different revenue streams as well as the flight ticket, and they're trying to tap into sort of, I guess the changing nature of tourism agencies, and they're trying to be the tourism agency.
They are, but because I'm thinking, because like it's $14, it's such a little amount, right? And I'm thinking, did they do that because after the turbulence that hit a few days ago, that hit Qatar Airways with for a flight like to Dublin, and 12 people were injured. And so I'm thinking, was that because, like, is the stopover that they have created at such a low amount, was it because of that?
A PR push to our way. Yeah, I wouldn't say they're linked. I think a lot of airlines are having turbulence issues at the moment. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's linked with air quality. I think people are saying it's climate related. But we can look into that more. You know, the from the GCC, the $14 is per person for up to 4 nights. The package includes accommodation at 4 or 5-star hotels, and they're available to residents and citizens of Bahrain, Saudi, Kuwait, Oman, and UAE. It's a 24-hour, these stopover packages have many benefits. So, it's $14 per person.
And it's one of the best, as well, airlines in the world. It has been mentioned that Qatar
was, they often win it, yeah.
And they did, of course, after the turbulence, I think, because a lot of news outlets covered the turbulence that hit Qatar Airways.
Yeah, there's a lot of turbulence stories lately. Like, we just saw one from British Airways where it was struck by lightning from Riyadh. Like, you can follow a lot of these stories. I love in Doha as well, and I love in Riyadh. But yeah, you're right, that was touched down in Dublin Airport, and we covered that on our Loving channels. But turbulence is an issue. I don't think they're related to the holidays revenue streams that these huge airlines work. But you rightly pointed out, it could be positive PR on the back of that.
I agree with you, actually.
And maybe the people who have suffered turbulence, maybe that they've been compensated with free flights and free tickets as well.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, 100%. You know, like, of course, I would imagine that Qatar Airways tried to compensate people who were as well, I would say, affected by the turbulence and their families and so on. But, you know, at this point, I'm just like maybe thinking out loud, you know, is it the turbulence? And because it's such a, I would say, it's a very small amount. $14 for a stopover is very little with like really high quality hotels and so on. I think that's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. Segueing into the Emirati-Egyptian partnership that was announced, it plans to develop $500 million or Egyptian pounds, 24 billion, mixed-use project along the Nile River in Cairo. So more Emirati-Egypt stories. Like, we've seen that Egypt has received a lot of bailouts from different parts of the world. You know, they've suffered immensely by macroeconomic factors since 2020, the pandemic, the price of oil, the different sort of geopolitical things that have happened, and their currency is devalued multiple times, and they're trying to get everything back on track. But we've seen things like a UAE investment in Ras Al Hakmah, north coast of Egypt, huge investment going on there. And now we're seeing a development project between UAE base HSK Investment Company and Egypt's Safwat Kaloubi Group, apologies for pronunciation there. The development will be located at the Tanash area of Cairo, covering 20,000 square meters, overlooking Warraq Island in the Nile. And it'll have three residential and commercial towers, a five-star hotel. Loads of developments happening around Cairo as well. There's the new capital. There's New Cairo. So these are names of places. Like, it's in the Dagama Fifth Settlement area of Egypt. So if you're thinking of the Nile and you look at the map, it's on the east side. And these are the newer, it's called New Capital, but it's actually called New Capital. It's not a project name, it's a city. And then the New Cairo is another city near where the current airport is. And this is on the Nile itself. We're not sure how far away from Cairo it is, but it says it's in Cairo. And it's an affiliate of the private department of His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Khaled Al Nahyan, represents an Emirati side of the partnership. On the other side of the Nile, you've got Sheikh Zayed City in Egypt as well. So that's after Baba Zayed originally. So there's a history of investments into Egypt. And this is from the KSH, so the Khaled Sheikh Mohammed bin Khaled Al Nahyan private department.
And as well, by the way, the investment, you know how like the Egyptian pound has dropped.
Yeah.
So the investment actually eased the critical foreign currency shortage from economic crisis. So now the $1 is 48.02 Egyptian pounds. Because like we have talked about, this is of course according to Reuters. They have mentioned that. So I would say that, you know, we have seen like this is all happening and it's going to be, I would say, easing up the economy of Egypt.
Yeah.
Of course, because like we have seen, as I said earlier, the Egyptian pound drop. So, and with the UAE investing in Egypt.
It's definitely a factor. We've also seen that the inflation, which is really, really high, has had 3 months of decrease. So it's still 25% or something. It's still high, but it's been dropping. It was at a max like a few months ago. So they're actually getting things under control, but the price of bread is up like a few hundred percent still. So they're managing consumer price index there, but they're definitely getting control with all this influx. You mentioned UAE. There's also IMF support, International Monetary Fund, a landmark deal. There's lots of things happening there as well. ADQ are signed a deal in Feb to build a new city, Abu Dhabi. So lots of things happening to stabilize the inflation on the back of multiple devaluations.
Yes.
Only one positive.
Question. What would you assume? Would the Egyptian pound as well drop again, like less than 55?
Yeah, I think it's stabilizing. I think you have to look at the different factors there. I think it's stabilizing. You know, they did what tools were available to them with fiscal stimulus, and they, you know, it is a period of austerity, so the purchasing price power of Egyptians is lower because the Egyptian pounds that they had in their bank was devalued against the dollar like three times. It was 15 Egyptian pounds, then 30, then nearly 50. So it's devalued a lot. So if you still have the same number of pounds, but your ability to spend it elsewhere. And then they have a lot of rules and regulation on tariffs and imports and exports. It's very hard to bring things into the country. It's very hard to get things out of the country. There's stimulus all over the place. So they're doing a lot of work on the economic side of Egypt. And you know, the thing is, like, if there's a large population there, and what you want is to stimulate economic recovery. And we do need the Gulf and the wider region needs these large populous countries to have better performing economies, because it's a spillover effect. And I think the UAE and others who invest into Egypt know that as well. And it provides more stability to the political environment. If the economy is performing, there's less unrest. So it's really important to have good performing economies and to bring people out of poverty. You know, we know the UN World Food Bank are based in Egypt, and they do a lot of work for Egypt, but also for around Africa as well. Yeah.
Yes, for neighboring countries as well. Well, thank you so much, Richard, for joining me and giving us your wisdom and insight on investment and so on. And this brings us to the end of our show.
Thanks, guys. Thursday, we'll be back tomorrow with another episode. Please do tune in. And again, follow Smashy Business or any of the other things. We're doing a lot of content on Smashy Gaming at the moment for the Esports World Cup in Saudi, and Smashy Sports as well. Do tune in. We'll be back tomorrow with another episode. Bye-bye.